Hill for FM News.
Quiet, please, ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Trump is the man who can save the Western world, and probably the human beings as well.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network. Live. And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
Almost lost my wife, my 67 Corvette, and my cat.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I want you to consider something, and you might sound, this might sound like kind of a crazy metaphor, but have you ever encountered one of those children, maybe even one of your own children, who has piles and piles of toys? Doesn't matter how old the kid is, could be 6 or 16, but they have lots and lots of things. And you say, why don't you play with your toys? And you say, the child says, those are old ones. I want a new one. I want a new one. And they refuse to play with the old ones. Do you know, government behaves that way at times. And in particular, I'm going to make that comparison to all the liberals in government who say, we have to have new gun laws. Now, I'm going to give you an example of where an existing law could have put a very bad criminal behind bars for a long, long time. And I'll describe exactly what the crime is. And they had him dead to rights, committing the crime 64 different times, putting guns into the hands of criminals. It's called a straw purchase. That's the way law enforcement and the prosecutors describe it. But 64 straw gun purchases. And when you purchase a straw purchase, when you purchase a gun as a straw man, what you do is you put it in the hands of a criminal. Now, how do I know the person whose hands you're putting it in is a criminal? Because, number one, the person who bought the gun had to fill out a form and swear under penalty of perjury, I am buying the gun for myself. But when you buy a gun and you actually intend to either sell or give it away to somebody else, the person you give it to, you are handing it to them. It is illegal to do that. So at the very least, they're a criminal because they're making a straw purchase through you. But the second reason is this. The only reason for somebody to buy a gun through a straw purchaser is because they have a criminal record, which means they can't buy the gun themselves. And usually they're paying a premium price for that firearm because they're saying, I've got a record. I can't buy a gun. Would you go and buy a gun for me? They tell this to somebody who has no current criminal record. So that person goes off to obtain the gun and put it in the hands of a criminal. Now, do you think just everything else being equal, do you think that a gun put in the hands of somebody who already has a criminal record and is committing a crime by purchasing the gun that way under the table in a straw purchase is the most likely firearm to be used to either hurt or kill somebody? That would be my theory. If you disagree, I'd be glad to take the naysayer call. And I'll get to last night's crazy GOP debate and some of the interesting things that came up in that, including some very good ideas. Now, none of those seven that you might have seen on the stage last night, typically the presidential debates, the GOP debates without Donald Trump, don't get much audience at all. And Donald Trump was not there. And some of the candidates, like Chris Christie, laid into Trump big time. He should be here. Why? Because more people would be paying attention if he was there, but he doesn't need to be there because he's already got 57% of GOP voters who already plan to make him the nominee. And that's a number that has been there for a while. And it is a rock solid number. It doesn't seem to be affected by indictments or by all the other trash that the media throws on Donald Trump. If anything, the more they throw trash and indictments at him, the stronger his support base gets among conservatives. And there's a reason for that. And he's going to run against a guy who has a majority of his party. That's Joe Biden. A majority of Democrats want anybody but Joe Biden. Well, maybe not anybody. They don't want Kamala Harris, but they want anybody except Joe Biden. So when you've got a guy who's got a 57% lock on the nomination at this point in the presidential sweepstakes, and he has about a 10-point lead on the current incumbent, Joe Biden, who doesn't know where he is most of the time, is there any reason for Donald Trump to show up there? And didn't he do more good by actually going off and talking to United Auto Workers, workers who are on the picket line? In fact, I think it's a bold thing for a conservative to do, a conservative like Donald Trump, but a conservative who cares about making America great. So should he help out union members? Absolutely. They need his help. Joe Biden is throwing them under the bus with electric vehicles. They're going to decimate America's car industry. And maybe the UAW workers know that, and maybe they don't. But Donald Trump tells them that. And you know what? It is the truth. And if anybody wants to dispute that, be a naysayer. Call 866-HEY-LARS. And if you are a naysayer, we'll put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you want even further crazy? Now, this is based on something that's actually happening in one Northwest county right now. Happens to be Benton County, Oregon. And I have to say Benton County, Oregon, because there's a Benton County, Washington. This is Benton County, Oregon. But listen closely. Should Northwest governments cut off reporters that the government decides are offering up fake news? Now, I saw that and I thought, they can't really be that crazy in Benton County, can they? Well, it turns out I called their PIO, Corey Grogan, and he confirmed they unanimously passed a policy that says that if the county commissioners or the county government decides that any reporter is not telling the story, reporting the story the way the county government wants them to, this may sound familiar, then they're simply going to cut that reporter off. No more access. So in other words, toe the line or you lose all access. Now, having been a reporter, if you're a reporter and you're covering county government, the courts and the cops and the sheriff's department, and the county government says, we're going to cut you off from access, that's your lifeline. If you can't talk to those people, you can still report stories, but your boss is not going to be very happy. He's going to say, maybe you should toe the line and just tell the story the way the government wants us to. You know, the way they would in communist China, or maybe in the old Soviet Union when they had the TASS news agency. In any case, should Northwest governments cut off reporters that they decide are offering up fake news, as Benton County, Oregon has done unanimously? I'll talk more about that a bit later, too, but let me tell you quickly this story about a straw purchaser. This guy's official name, I don't know what his gangbanger name is, 25-year-old Edward Charles Green, was a member, self-identified, of the Portland Unthanked Park Hustlers, a Bloods gang. And he was involved in 64 firearms purchases that were illegal and then handing the guns off to other criminals. And the police confirmed that over about the last 3.5 years, those guns have ended up being used in crimes to actually hurt people and shoot up neighborhoods. But here's the worst part. Joe Biden's Department of Justice, the U.S. Attorney's Office, sat down and did a plea deal. Now, plea deals make sense in a lot of cases. But in this case, consider this, for putting illegally purchased guns in the hands of 64 criminals, how much punishment do you suppose that Edward Charles Green of the Unthanked Park Hustlers Bloods gang, how much punishment did he get? He got a little bit less than 2 weeks in prison for every gun he put in the hands of a criminal. Now, if you want to have new gun laws, you got to use the gun laws you've already got. And right now, the U.S. Attorney's Office is letting gun criminals go with very light punishment. Glad to be with you on a Thursday. Glad to hear your conspiracy theories, too. If you want to dial in, it's 866-HEY-LARS or send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com on the Radio Northwest Network.
At least someone has a plan for illegal aliens.
Back in the White House, I will terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration and begin the largest deportation operation in American history.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment. moment every day, where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
The same thuggish, destructive behavior that has driven office workers and retail stores from downtowns like Portland and Seattle has now moved out to the suburbs. Anti-forestry activists attacked the World Forestry Center during a conference on Northwest forest issues this week. Now, the Forestry Center has a rich history that goes back more than 100 years to the Lewis and Clark Exposition of 1905. It's been a fixture near the Oregon Zoo for more than half a century and hosts education and industry conferences. Sound good, right? Well, one of those conferences going on this week, and the thugs used it as an excuse for their attacks. They even announced their crime. We hope this action reminds anarchists that we can attack without a call to action. Forestry has supplied the Northwest region with billions in wood products for most of Oregon's statehood. For decades, it supplied jobs for hundreds of thousands. Today, the forest industry is a pale shadow of its former glory. And now tree huggers would rather break the windows and destroy the property. They would rather see trees go up in flames every single summer than manage the forests, create jobs, supply the lumber we need, and replant new trees forever. Go figure. Our question of the day comes in from Kevin Burns, and I actually checked to make sure that what he was telling me was accurate. Lars, Costco announced yesterday that it's now selling gold bars, and I checked, sure enough, they are. Is Bob Menendez their supplier? All the best, signed Kevin. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
Well, as I mentioned a moment ago, Benton County's commissioners, and that's Benton County, Oregon, have set up a policy that establishes a ministry of truth. Now, of course, they don't call it a ministry of truth, but that's exactly what it is, to decide which information they consider legitimate and which is not legitimate according to them. And I confirmed it was passed unanimously by county commissioners. Now, I, first thing this morning, made a call to County Commissioner Nancy Wise, who seemed to have some questions about it, even though she voted for it, and I thought I'd get a call back from her. Nope. Got a call back from their public information officer. When elected officials like Nancy Wise or anybody else dodge behind the PIO, it suggests to me even they know that what they've done is wrong. Not surprisingly, all of the Benton County commissioners declined my invitation to come on the show today and talk about their new Ministry of Truth. And their public information officer, Corey Grogan, who I've met before, he used to work for the military department, he admits he wrote the policy. He also refused politely to come on the show and answer questions about it. The policy is now in the books, but a short time ago, Grogan messaged me to indicate the commission may actually act to modify or even kill the policy that it only just passed unanimously when the commissioners meet again in a couple of weeks. I'd love to have one of them or Mr. Grogan come on the show and take some questions. How does this not violate the First Amendment to the Constitution? Remember, freedom of press? Now, the fact is, you can say, well, they're not outlawing presses in Benton County. No, they're not. But the Supreme Court has had a number of rulings on what they call a chilling effect. And if you're the reporter covering county government, city government, state government, federal government, and the government says, if we don't like your stories, we're going to cut you off at the knees and cut off access to the people that you want to ask questions of because we, the government, decide what is legitimate information. I reminded Mr. Grogan that over the last 3 years, we've had lots and lots of examples. You know, like the government that said, oh, that laptop of Hunter Biden's, that's Russian disinformation. And that turned out to be a lie. Or they told us the virus didn't come from China and the Wuhan lab. It came from animals. And that turned out to be a lie. And then Anthony Fauci doesn't have a dog in the fight, except he had millions of dollars worth of dogs in the fight. All of those turned out to be lies, but the government at the time insisted they were the truth. Today's best email, but you can always send more. This one comes from Nick. Hey, Lars, watching the hearings on impeachment today, a few of the Democrats, rather than ask questions relating to this inquiry into the ties between Hunter Biden and the big guy, they bring up a business deal that Jared Kushner made the deal after Donald Trump's final day in office, in which he made millions. Now, Jared Kushner is President Trump's son-in-law. In essence, they're implying if you go after Hunter's dealing to get influence peddling done by his father, Joe Biden, shouldn't there have been an inquiry into Jared's dealings and the relationships to his father-in-law? Two things. One, if the Democrats thought there was a connection, why didn't they have hearings on that issue and impeach Donald Trump on that? Well, as you point out, it happened after Trump walked out of office. Pelosi and Schiff were drunk on power at that point. No pun intended to Pelosi. Certainly, they would have pursued it if they could have. Two, aren't they then, by making remarks about the Kushner-Trump connection, saying that indeed the Hunter-Joe relationship and the millions of dollars is a legitimate connection and should be investigated? Democrats, the smartest people they know. If you don't believe that, just ask them. Signed, Nick. To your calls now. Let's start with Lisa in Everett, listening on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, Lisa, welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday.
Thank you so much for taking my call, Lars. I was watching the debates last night, the Republican debates, and I think it was DeSantis who said, we need to vote in someone who can be president for more than 4 years.
I heard that, too. I watched the whole thing. It was a painful exercise to watch, but I did watch it, Lisa, so I saw him say that.
Oh, I know. But none of the commentators afterwards picked up on that comment, and I thought, that's interesting, because you know, generally, it's easier for an incumbent president to get a second term, even though with Trump, there was a whole bunch of junk going on with that, but you know, that's an interesting thought, because if Trump does get the presidency, he can only be there for 4 years. And then we have to kind of renew the fight and try to position another successor in the Republican, hopefully America First agenda. And that could be difficult rather than having somebody who's already in there and hopefully they'd be successful and it'd be easier for them to get a second term.
It's not a bad argument by Ron DeSantis, but there are a couple of problems. One, it's a bit arrogant to say, well, if you elect me for 4 years, you're really electing me for eight. Although you're right in pointing out incumbents have a much higher chance of getting reelected unless there are shenanigans and cheating by the Democrats. But at this point, let's see, Ron DeSantis is roughly 40-some points behind Donald Trump. And he used to be more like 20 points behind Donald Trump, and he's only been going the wrong direction. Do you see much chance that any one of the seven standing on that stage last night has a snowball's chance of actually getting the nomination?
Not really. Just because of this so far ahead. But, and he, I mean, he did have a lot of success. And even though the, you know, the right-wing media will say, oh, but he did this bad and this bad and this bad. I mean, he did so many things good, but they never want to talk about it.
Nope.
And they, yeah. So anyway.
No, I mean, you make a very good point. And Lisa, if that one works for DeSantis, nothing else has worked for him so far. Fact is, the guy spent about $100 million in about 6 months going from 30-some percent in the polls to about 14.5% in the polls. He's going the wrong direction. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Go to the head of the line at the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want you to consider something. I look for what I call litmus tests. When groups do things, it kind of tests where do their values sit, where are they going, and what's going on. And a good litmus test, I think, is coming up this weekend in the National Federation of Republican Women's Conference. And one of the people going to that conference is Amy Ryan Corser, who's been a great participant in politics, less successful than we would have hoped, but that's not her fault. That may be cheating in elections or a lot of other factors. But, Amy, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, Lars. Thanks for having me.
So tell me this. The National Republican Women's Conference is being held in Oklahoma City. You're going, and one thing on the agenda just lit you on fire, and tell us what it is.
It sure did. We are voting as a group, and the delegates are voting as members to allow or disallow trans men to become a part of our group.
Now, Jill, I want to guess. You've already made up your mind on that one, and you know how you're going to vote.
Well, absolutely. And I feel very strong and passionate about my stance and always have. But I have to tell you, I do want to share that I'm proud to share that we do have 18 wonderful delegates coming from Oregon to be a voice for Oregon. And there's a lot of people standing up and standing against this, Lars. So I want you to know that we have a lot of great women showing up and being heard. I think that's important.
Well, I want to ask you something, though. Why is it even on the agenda? Because the fact that something gets on the agenda tells me that there's at least some support for the notion that men who call themselves women will be endorsed, sanctioned by Republican women. The Republican women saying, sure, women can be replaced by a guy in a dress with lipstick. Somebody put that on the agenda. Should that tell us something about where the Republican Party is going?
No, I don't think you should read too much into it, although I do think that there are states who are trying to be politically correct. Remember, this is every state in our nation. So I think that it's important to remember that it will be on the ballot, but that does not mean, of course, that it will pass. I mean, to me, my answer is not very politically correct, which is, to me, it's just complete insanity. Like, I can't even believe we're having this conversation, to tell you the truth.
Well, I think it's insulting to women. It's saying, you know what, women, we can replace you with a guy. You know, whether a guy still has a penis or has had it removed, we can replace you. I think that's inherently insulting to women, isn't it?
Well, not only is it inherently insulting today, but look how far we have come and how hard we've worked as a nation to propel women's sports, women in business, women. I mean, we have a lot of great women who've worked very hard to get where they have. And it's to those women that we're slapping in the face with this. So I agree. I do agree with you.
I mean, see, here's one thing, and allow me to make this comparison. Did you hear what happened in Canada that got worldwide attention within the last week?
I'm not sure which thing you're referring to.
They invited a Nazi, a Ukrainian Nazi, but a Nazi all the same, to sit in their chamber at in the parliament and be given a standing ovation. And he's a freaking Nazi. And you say, okay, he's a Nazi. The war's over. The Nazis are largely gone. No big deal. I think it's a very big deal. You don't invite Klansmen. You don't invite Nazis. And frankly, the fact that that anybody in the Republican ranks, women, are saying, well, we ought to at least consider the idea of allowing these men who are biological men, but they call themselves women, we ought to at least entertain the idea. I think there are certain ideas, Amy, that I would even say, you don't even have to think of that one. Don't even consider it. Genocide would be one. You know, there are lots of ideas that are really bad right on their face, and you don't even have to think about it. So I'm wondering who among Republicans, even up from liberal states, would say this is a great idea.
Well, I don't necessarily think anybody said it's a great idea. I haven't heard that, so I hate to promote something I haven't heard.
Somebody put it on the agenda. If you put it on the agenda, you're saying it's an idea we might actually vote for, right?
They did, and I would assume it, you know, it was a legal thing. Like, isn't that always the case where the only ones that win are the attorneys? But I want to tell you, in my opinion, my humble opinion, first and foremost, we have to stop the victimization narrative, but we have to change the narrative so that we can stop normalizing this narrative, right? Which to me, and I listen to your show a lot, I'm a big fan, but we are promoting Marxism 101 by even just hearing it out, in my opinion. That's just me. I'm pretty black and white on that. But the bottom line, Lars, is that we have got to stop pandering to the 1.8% of our nation, and we got to come out swinging. We got to come out hard and fast and say, we are tired of being demonized. We're tired of the gaslighting. And you know what? It's happening everywhere. It's not just Oregon. It's happening everywhere. And we have to be willing to have the tough conversations and to not be afraid to speak out and back down. And I can assure you that those women today, 18 women from Oregon, are going to be pushing back. And it's going to be a hard no. And it should be a hard no every time we have the conversation, Lars. Like, this isn't just one and done. This is a conversation and narrative that is continuing, and we have got to fight back and unite to fight back. It sounds so simple, and I hate to say it in the sense that it's so simple, but the reality is we cannot lose focus on what really matters, and that is our kids and protecting our children. And that's got to be our bottom line. And we cannot win this fight and this battle if we don't all unite and push back with a narrative.
I agree with you. And the business about victims, I thought last night's GOP debate was kind of a joke. But one of the narratives from Vivek Ramaswamy, who I don't think has a snowball's chance of being the nominee this year, maybe somewhere down the line. He's a smart guy. He's got some good ideas. He's got some ideas I like. But he said, it is a choice. No, it was Tim Scott. It is a choice. Well, I can't remember which one it was, who said, it is a choice whether you become a victim. I don't think we're victims. And maybe it does make sense. Fine. Yep. Propose whatever cockamamie idea you want. But we're going to vote it down. I guess the litmus test for me is, what do actual biological Republican women say to the idea of allowing themselves to be supplanted or even replaced to some extent by biological men? And if they don't vote that one down hard, Amy, then they're saying something terrible, not only about themselves, the ones who vote for this, but also about the group that they belong to. That's the only concern I've got, is that you might actually get 20%. And you know what the other side's going to say? They're all about incrementalism. They'll say, well, we got 20% this time. We'll get 30 or 40 next time. And in a few years, we'll get a majority. And then it'll be game over.
Right. Well, I can tell you that the Republican women I know, and I know some amazing Republican women, we are strong, we are feisty, we are fighting for Oregon. And I'll tell you what, there is no way in a snowball chance that you, as you put it, that we are going to let this stand. And it doesn't matter if it's in our backyards, our schools, our communities, and our board meetings, and our businesses, and right now, the National Federation of Republican Women. I don't believe it's going to stand. I think we're going to fight hard on this, Lars.
I sure hope you're right about that, because this is the thing. If there are people out there, and I agreed with Ramaswamy when he said that this transgender stuff is a mental illness. It was defined by the DSM-4 like that for a long, long time, only recently changed, again, for political reasons, not for science. But it's a mental illness. If you think that you're actually a woman because of what's going on inside your head and not because of what you were born with, what God gave you, then go ahead and think that. But you don't need, I know why you want it, but you don't need the endorsement of the National Republican Women's Group or any other group. But if you say we want to get that, I think they're pursuing another agenda. They say if we can take over institutions and force them to endorse our idea, then they gain political power. And they say, you see, even Republican women endorse our crazy ideas. I don't want to be part of that, and I hope the National Republican Women's Conference feels the same way. Amy, let us know what happens. I'll be amazed at what the vote is.
I will. I'd love to call back with a report next week, if that's okay.
I'd be absolutely okay with that. That's Amy Ryan Corser. Thanks, Amy. Glad to get your calls when we get back. Any naysayers on that? Anybody think the Republican Women's Group should endorse including biological men in their ranks? You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Exercising the right to free speech every day. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I got a scary story to tell you about a toddler who came very, very close to dying, believe it or not, a toddler from fentanyl overdose. And you're not going to believe the circumstances. Let me get to the details of that in a moment. First, let's go to the phones. And if you want to jump in on this Conspiracy Theory Thursday, you're always welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. As always, naysayers go to the head of the line. Our Twitter poll today, should Northwest governments, any of them at any level, should they cut off reporters that those governments decide are offering up fake news? I would say no to that. In fact, I think it is unconstitutional, that it violates the First Amendment to the Constitution for the government to try to conspire to say we will only allow certain information and other information we will cut off the reporters who report stories we don't like. That's what Benton County, Oregon has adopted unanimously. It is a lot like the Ministry of Truth. Let me go first to Tia, though. Tia in Hillsborough, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. I just wanted to know your opinion about the recent stop of Obama at the Nike campus. And do you think that has anything to do with Phil Knight's recent donation to the opposition of Mike Schmidt, of the DA Mike Schmidt?
I don't. I mean, here's the thing. I try to differentiate between Phil Knight and Nike. Phil Knight is still, as if I'm right, he's still the largest stockholder in Nike, but he's not. He doesn't own the whole company. And he left. I mean, he was chairman of the board. He's no longer. He was CEO. He's no longer. He's not separate from the guy. I mean, he's still linked to the company because he owns a lot of the company's stock. But I frequently see Nike corporate is going far to the left. You know, the Colin Kaepernick take a knee garbage and all that. And Knight, I don't know Knight personally. I think I've met him once and shook his hand and that was about it. He's a really tough guy to land an interview with, but I've admired what he's done in funding conservative causes in Oregon, where you have to know that some of the people that Knight associates with probably aren't too crazy about his conservative donations. And I'm sure they probably tell him so, but Knight is different than the company.
So you don't think Obama was telling him to toe the line?
No, I don't. I don't. Frankly, when you're worth as much as Phil Knight is worth, political candidates or former political candidates or former presidents even don't tell you what to do. You probably tell them what to do. If anything, I don't know. I wish I could give you an educated guess as to what he's doing. I mean, Obama and his wife.
Why he was even there? Because they don't know why Obama came still. They don't.
No, they don't. We know he was in Seattle and he had some private fundraisers with Jill Biden. Now, do I think that Obama is calling the shots in the Biden White House? I do. I believe that Obama is directing what goes on in the White House. Now, could I prove it?
Absolutely.
I could not because I think he's covered his tracks well enough. He wished during his time as president for a third term, wished openly. There's a great soundbite of him talking about it. Now, people say he was joking. You know, sometimes when people joke about things, Tia, they end up turning out to be true. Like if your boss starts joking a lot about, you know, one of these days you're going to do something stupid, really stupid, and I'm going to fire you. You should probably, I'm just joking. Take that joking seriously, because someday it may come true. But in Obama's case, I think he wanted to be in control. And I think he is. An awful lot of Joe Biden's central White House staffers, you know, the core, there's 1,300 people or so who work at the White House directly. You know, I mean, it's a gigantic staff. But there are about a dozen right at the center of that who are the movers and the shakers. And an awful lot of them used to work for Barack Obama. And so if you say, well, how does he pull the strings on Joe? I'm sure that all he's got to do is have conversations with people on the phone. And it's something that's completely under the radar. There'd be no way to prove it or anything else. But Tia, I appreciate the phone call. Thank you very much. But interesting theory. If anybody's got a better theory as to what happened yesterday, because we told you that, and I found out, I'll give them credit, OregonLive.com actually was first word of the story that Barack Obama had stealthed in to, apparently flew into Hillsborough Airport on a private jet, took a motorcade, went to the Nike World campus, was there for some period of time, we don't know how much, got a little bit of a tour, we don't know who he met with, we don't know what they talked about, we don't know why he was there. Could be almost anything. And I, as I said, I wish I had an educated guess as to why that happened. But it did. He left around, I guess he left the World campus around 2, and then apparently was wheels up and off to other places. But he and his wife have made a huge amount of money from book publishers, from Netflix. And would he try to make some money through the Nike Corporation? Sure. Why not? I mean, you know what? You know what's funny? I'm going to have Joel, who's our newest producer. We got to look up this soundbite at some point, because Obama, one time as president, was talking about how crazy it was that people made massive amounts of money. And he made this comment, and I've almost got it verbatim. He said, at some point, you've made enough money. That is, you get to 20 million or 50 million or 100 million. And you say, I got more money than I could ever spend in my entire life. And then when you get to 50 million, you think, you know, if I had another 50 million, I could have a bigger jet, or I could have more of this or more of that or whatever. And Obama hasn't said anything like that since. And of course, now he's worth exactly what he was talking about. Enough to have money for the rest of your life. And Obama, I'd love to have somebody ask him, when you said at some point you've made enough money, have you made that amount yet? And if not, how much are you shooting for? You got the Lars.
The Lars.
Quiet, please. Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Trump is the man who can save the Western world, and probably the human beings as well.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
Almost lost my wife, my 67 Corvette, and my cat.
Lars Larson.
Don't talk about the laptop. Be scared of climate change. Don't talk about Afghanistan. Don't talk about Ukraine. Just get your news from TikTok or maybe CNN. Don't do your own research. The truth is what I say it is. Cause we're from the government and we're here to help.
Hey.
Follow the money, it leads straight down to hell. We lie to your face, act like you don't have a clue. We're living in D.C., we're called the Ministry of Truth.
Hey. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. That is our friend Buddy Brown from Mississippi. But I want to point something out to you. While Joe Biden's plan to set up a Ministry of Truth at the federal level failed big time, it's actually being done at the local level in some places. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want to tell you about this because this not only makes me angry, to some extent it makes me fearful that people in government have decided we are the arbiters of truth and we will decide what is true and what is not. And if you decide to report to people some other version than what we, the government, dictate, then we will cut you off from information. And if you're wondering, well, where exactly is that happening? I can't tell you where else in America, but I can tell you one particular county in the Pacific Northwest, and that is Benton County, Oregon. And this is amazing to me that people in government know so little about the U.S. Constitution. And I know you're going to think, Lars, you talk about the Constitution all the time. Yes, I do. It is the rule book, not for us, but for government. It doesn't grant a single right to citizens because citizens already enjoy those rights as granted by God, not by government. And if you don't believe that, I'll be glad to play you the JFK soundbite, John F. Kennedy, who said the radical idea, this is in one of, in his inaugural speech, the radical idea that the rights of men come from God and not from the government. That's JFK back in the early 1960s. Guess what happened in Benton County, Oregon last week? The county commissioners, all of whom have refused to come on and answer my questions about this, and their public information person, their spokesperson, Corey Grogan, has also said, we're not going to come on and talk about this. In fact, we may even vote next week, next month, to reconsider it. They're already getting so much blowback in Benton County, Oregon over this nonsense, and not just from me, but from other people, that they may actually take another swing at it. But in a unanimous vote, Benton County's, this is the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, Benton County's elected officials last week ushered in a new media policy that, among other things, says officials will refuse to talk to members of the media who are not objective. Now, if you say, well, Lars, aren't all reporters supposed to try to be objective? Yes, they are. But it is not for the government to decide that. And the First Amendment to the Constitution says that. And if you say, well, that just talks about the government shall not prohibit freedom of the press or shall not impede freedom of the press. You're right. But since then, there have been Supreme Court decisions. And I want you to think about this for a moment. There's an idea that the U.S. Supreme Court has talked about in a number of their decisions. And it's called a chilling effect, When I was a day-to-day street reporter, just a nuts and bolts covering courts and cops reporter, and I kept my opinion out of my stories, and my boss watched in case I put my opinion in my stories, and I watched other reporters saying, you should keep your opinion out of stories. And I think I successfully did that. These days, I put my opinion up front and center. So I'm sure that Benton County's new policy would say, well, Lars isn't objective. We're not going to talk to him. And so far, I'm batting 1,000 on that one because Benton County won't talk about their own policy that their county commissioners adopted unanimously. I actually put my call in not to Corey Grogan, the spokesman. I put it into Nancy Wise, who's a county commissioner. She didn't call me back. Apparently, she's decided I'm not objective. So they said the policy funnels nearly all communications through one person, not even an elected official. Corey Grogan, the public information officer. And they've already got a bunch of lawyers saying, hey, this ain't constitutional. And I would say the very same thing. This is a county government, and I wouldn't put it past state governments to do the very same thing, to say, we're going to decide what's objective and what's accurate. And if you report a story in a way that we, the government, disagree with, we're going to simply cut you off from all other information. And I told Corey Grogan this because he won't come on the air, but I said, do you remember back when the government told us that masks would actually slow down the virus? And we said, but there are studies that say otherwise. They said, it doesn't matter. This is what we say. This is the only truth we accept. They also said, and public officials like Joe Biden said, if you get the jab, you can't catch COVID. That turned out to be a bald-faced lie. But anybody who contradicted the government was shot down as a purveyor of misinformation. A lot of us also said it only makes common sense that the virus that originated out of Wuhan, China, probably came from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And you know what we got called? We got called misinformation. We got called racist, jingoistic, ethnocentric, anti-Chinese, and every name in the book. Guess what? We now know to a fair certainty, and government now admits, the virus probably came from that Chinese communist lab, funded in part with our American taxpayer money, that created the virus because they were doing military germ research. And yet, if you said it 3 years ago, you were called a purveyor of misinformation. I think Benton County is dead wrong on this. And I wish one of their county commissioners had the guts to actually stand up and defend their vote in favor of this. On that note, let's go to Bob. Hey, Bob, thanks for the call, and thanks for listening. What's on your mind?
Hey, you know, I just wanted to remind you folks that not only did the Constitution come into play, that there are a lot of states that have administrative codes. Those administrative codes cover things like coercion. And if you haven't talked about coercion on the air, coercion is where you threaten to do something to somebody, take away something, if they don't do like you say. There's also conspiracy to commit that. And when they're threatening to take people's livelihoods away, that would be considered coercion, so I'm sure they're going to get their day in court.
If they decide to stick with this. But, Bob, what do you think? Because I told Grogan, I said, listen, the best way to test information is not for the government to set itself up as the ultimate arbiter of what's true and what's not. Put it out there. If I put out a story that's based on bunk, I try not to do that. I work hard not to do that. I'm proud that I safeguard the information I provide to people. Now, do I define myself as saying, well, I'm the ultimate oracle when it comes to the truth? I don't do that. But on the other hand, if you say you can only tell the story the way this county or this state or this city sees it, and if you tell it any other way, we're going to cut you off at the knees. That is the government trying to set itself up as a ministry of truth. It's exactly the same thing Joe Biden tried, and he got shot down big time. I think the same thing is going to happen in Benton County. Glad to get your calls and your emails. Talk at LarsLarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll. Check out our Instagram feed and Facebook and Twitter as well. You got the Lars Larson Show. When it comes to the end.
Broadcasting the sound of freedom. Here's Lars Larson.
The reality is just because Putin is not Putin's an evil dictator does not mean that Ukraine is good.
Wow. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show. That was Vivek Ramaswamy last night in the GOP debate. And I realize, and I've said so, my choice is Donald Trump. That is also the choice of apparently about 57% of Republican voters nationwide. So Trump has a virtual lock on the nomination that will be awarded next summer by the GOP. Now, of course, next summer is a long ways away. Things could change. My position is not going to change unless something really crazy happens between now and then. But it was interesting to watch the seven candidates stand on the stage last night, including Vivek Ramaswamy and, of course, Chris Christie and a bunch of other people. Ron DeSantis acquitted himself well. Nikki Haley acquitted herself well. But the problem is all of them are 40 points or more behind the leader of the race, and they have been for some time. Doesn't appear that much of anything is changing. But a couple of the things that Vivek Ramaswamy brought up, again, I don't think he's going to get the nomination at all. I just don't think he has a snowball's chance, nor do I think that Ron DeSantis is going to get it. I think Chris Christie is looking for a free meal, a good book deal, and maybe a gig at CNN. It appears, based on his answers, he doesn't even talk like a Republican anymore most of the time. But I thought I'd share a couple of the sound bites from it, because Ramaswamy has been one of the few who, like me, have called out this crazy war in Ukraine. We've said, where is America's national security interest in sending not only weapons, but tens of billions of dollars into a notoriously corrupt country? That's a problem. And he's right. Just because you say, well, Putin is a bad guy, does not mean that Ukraine is good. And yet, most of the mainstream media, the legacy media, like to cast things the way you'd cast a very simple Western movie in Hollywood. You'd say, well, we've got the guys in the White House and we've got the guys in the black hats, and there's not much difference between the two. But that was Vivek Ramaswamy in last night's seven-way GOP debate, lacking the one candidate who already has such a commanding lead, he is not likely to be displaced between now and next summer. But let me go back to Ramaswamy for a moment about Ukraine and about why the mainstream media seems to be ignoring a lot of the questionable things that Ukraine does. Because once they've set the narrative, Putin is bad, Russia's bad, Ukraine is good, that's why we're sending tens of billions of dollars to the same country where Joe Biden and his Biden crime family made so much money, and I think there is a connection there, you say, well, are we going to question anything that Ukraine does? For example, this soundbite from Vivek last night.
This is a country that has banned 11 opposition parties.
A win
that
has for actually, Russia is a
that
win
is not
for
true.
China.
We're driving
a win
Russia.
For Russia
excuse
is a
me.
Win
ex-
for China.
Excuse me. If you have
but
a chance,
I forgot you like
you'll
China.
Have,
That's
no,
why you're
you'll have
there.
You'll have your chance in just a moment.
In just a moment. But he's right. You've got a country that apparently does not subscribe to the same beliefs and freedom that we have. You ban opposition parties, and then Joe Biden stands up and says Ukraine is the kind of country that we have to support because we're supporting American democracy, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, there were moments like this, and there was more than one of them, but I wanted to give you a sampling. Have you ever seen seven people on a debate stage all talking into the microphones at the same time? Take a listen to what it sounded like. Now, I don't want to be unfair. I think Doug Burgum from North Dakota, who also is not going to get the nomination, although he and Ramaswamy are a couple of the smartest guys on the stage. The rest of them are largely politicians, but Burgum has a background in business that is very successful, and so does Ramaswamy. But Burgum stood there. I think he was the only one of the seven who is not babbling on. And then, of course, you got Chris Christie, who seems to be trying to prove that he's not actually a Republican after all, that he's more like a Democrat, because who did he attack? I mean, he's up there debating with six other candidates, and he decides to attack the candidate who's not even there. Take a listen.
You're not here tonight because you're afraid of being on the stage and defending your record. You're ducking these things. And let me tell you what's going to happen. You keep doing that, no one up here is going to call you Donald Trump anymore. We're going to call you Donald Duck.
Yeah, that joke kind of fell flat, but Chris Christie kept making the point. There were a couple of the candidates who kept making that point that, well, Donald Trump's not here. Donald Trump didn't need to be there. I don't think Donald Trump would gain from it. I don't think the American public would gain for it. Do you know do you know the only people who would actually gain from having Donald Trump on that stage? Number one, the television media would gain because they get a much bigger audience. And the seven candidates standing on stage would gain because they'd have more people paying attention to them. I'll cite the first presidential debate earlier, the first of the GOP debates, in which the last time we had a GOP debate like that with a number of candidates was the previous election. And 50 million Americans watched. That's about one American out of six, if you count adults. But then you say, well, how many showed up for the first GOP debate this time around? About half that number, about 25 million. Meanwhile, Donald Trump himself sat down with Tucker Carlson famously and got probably four, five, six times that many people watching what he had to say. Why in the world would he show up on stage to try to stand there and be attacked by the other candidates? That's one issue. I don't think he's afraid of attacks. He spent the last, well, let's see, it's 2023. He spent the last 8 years being attacked by not just the left, but the right and the media all simultaneously. He's not afraid of attacks, but he doesn't want to lend his own, basically draw to that event by showing up for something that doesn't benefit him at all and only helps his opponents. But let me go back to Vivek Ramaswamy. He said the bold thing about Ukraine, but he also said something bold about the whole issue of transgender, and it was very upfront. Take a listen to this.
I have to be very clear about this. Transgenderism, especially in kids, is a mental health disorder. We have to acknowledge the truth of that for what it is. And I'm sorry, it is not compassionate to affirm a kid's confusion. That is not compassion, that is cruelty. So I will ban genital mutilation or chemical castration.
Okay, but I wanna know.
Yeah, and of course, one of the moderators, Dana Perino, chooses to interrupt just as he's finishing what was going to be a fairly short statement, saying, I'm not going to back the chemical castration of children. And that's a fairly sensible point of view. It happens to be my point of view as well. But when I heard that, I thought, how many Americans will respond positively to the idea that, number one, the whole transgender issue is a mental health disorder, and that it's not compassionate to say, oh, you think you're a girl or you think you're a boy, why don't we start giving you puberty blockers, permanently change your body before you're old enough to make a sensible, informed decision, and then call it compassionate care. The other issue that I really agreed with him on, because I've talked about it for a long time, is anchor babies. The 14th Amendment does not say that the children of illegal aliens born on American soil are citizens. And yet that's the way America has run the law for the last several decades. Listen to Ramaswamy.
I favor ending birthright citizenship for the kids of illegal immigrants in this country. Now, the left will howl about the Constitution and the 14th Amendment. The difference between me and them is I've actually read the 14th Amendment. What it says is that all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the laws and jurisdiction thereof
subject
are citizens.
To laws and jurisdiction
so
thereof the is the key part of the 14th Amendment. Ramaswamy is right about that. I'd like to see Donald Trump saying the same thing as well, and I'll bet he'd agree with that. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Be honest. You're listening because you like what you hear. Right? Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails, and I'll get right back to those phone calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. Of course, naysayers always go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. I want to bring on Dan Steiner, who's founder and president of Preborn, and with whom I agree on issues of life. Dan, welcome back.
Hey, Lars, great to be on your program. I'm not a naysayer, but I'm glad to be up for cue here.
See, that's the thing. You and I agree, and I always tell my audience that if I've got a bias in a particular case, I'm pro-life. So I agree with that. And I think I could accurately say that, you know, during his time as president, Donald Trump was the most pro-life president that American had seen in modern history, period. More so even than Reagan, more so even than either one of the Bushes. Although they, you know, Reagan had some great things, but, and was pro-life, but I think Trump actually got some things done. And of course, his appointments to the Supreme Court were hugely significant. So tell me this, what should we make of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis slamming President Trump for comments on abortion? Because I still haven't figured out exactly what Trump meant in those comments, and I'll be honest about that.
Yeah, it's a little bit disturbing, isn't it, Lars, that a president who gave us the setup for the Dobbs decision back in January 24th of 2022 that sent Roe versus Wade back to the trash heap of history where it came from, back to hell where it belongs, is the one that is now waffling a little bit, Trump, on the whole issue and thinks that there ought to be, you know, a date at which you could say that both sides would agree abortion is okay. And for fellows like you and me, that dog don't hunt, you know.
No,
there's no date where it's okay to kill a baby, you know. So I think he's taking a political stance, Trump is, from the perspective that, you know, it's, if it's him and Biden, I don't care what he says, I'm going to vote for him, and, you know, probably, as a citizen, not as the president of the preborn, and because I can't say that. But apart from that, I do think that DeSantis has taken a good, strong, firm, and he's using, you know, he's taking a good hard line on it in Florida and is using the occasion of Trump's waffling for a political advantage, obviously. But either one would be a great, you know, choice for life.
Well, Dan, one of the things that struck me is that a lot of the left got to where they get by incrementalism. They make a small change and another small change and another small change. And an awful lot of us who are pro-life say it's either or, yes or no. There is no in between. And I understand that. But is Trump trying to say, well, the 6-week abortion ban, which I think is a reasonable time limit, is actually right in line with what Europe does. And it is a move forward. It's a move in the right direction. Is it the final move? No. But is it what we can, in some states, especially states that are a little bit purple, is it where we can get right now until we get something better? Or should we simply say no solution is appropriate except the one that says that all unborn life is protected?
Well, I mean, so we're dealing with the arena of politics, and politics is the art of compromise by its definition. That's
it
how
is.
Things get accomplished.
Yep.
Certainly you and I are biblically oriented and directed people who do not give an inch on any point to take a baby's life. So there's the conundrum there, right? If you're going to be successful politically, you've got to give a little bit of ground. But preborns, you know, we see babies dozens and dozens every day that are under attack to have their lives taken at 5.5 weeks. So we can't, you know, as a ministry, we can't and won't. We stand with where the Lord stands on this, that, you know, it's sacred from conception to death. Politically, I'm glad I'm not a politician.
Yeah, I'm glad too, because let me, I may quote him inaccurately, but I'll get the gist of it. But Reagan said, you know, in terms of choosing who to vote for, you should choose the most conservative candidate who can win. And believe me, I mean, I live in a very liberal neck of the woods in the Pacific Northwest, and we often get candidates when you say, this person's a perfect conservative. They're right on every single issue, including life, and they don't have a snowball's chance. And so the question is, do you vote for that person out of principle, saying, I'm going to vote out of principle, it won't actually change anything, or do you vote for, as Reagan said, the most conservative candidate who can win?
Yeah, it's a principle over pragmatism argument, and that's the essence of politics. I do feel you're spot on when you say that they've incrementally, and that's what they do all the way, you know, Planned Parenthood's been around for 100 years, and so 100 years of incrementalism has given us a $1.2 billion death machine built on incrementalism. You know, they not just giving abortions, but also going into middle schools and junior highs and now even elementary schools and promoting sexual promiscuity to fuel the abortion, you know, fuel unplanned pregnancies, which fuel the abortion. And so incrementalism is, when you're talking about the culture versus faith, that is certainly an important way to gain ground. As ministers of the gospel, I won't ever compromise on that. In our centers, we never compromise on that. It's life from conception. But I think that it's, you know, if you're going to get Biden or you're going to get somebody that's a conservative on a couple of issues you don't agree, maybe you're too liberal.
Dan, I look at it as, I'm talking to Dan Steiner from Preborn. I look at it as this. If you, can we agree that the 6-week limitation will undoubtedly save lives? Will it save every life we want to save? No. Will it save some lives? I believe that we can already see the numbers that suggest it is saving lives, and Dobbs is saving some lives. Is it a perfect decision? No. But we got somewhere with it, and we saved lives. And so if the choice was, well, if we can't save all of them, then we should take the choice that says, well, then we won't save any. We'll wait for the perfect solution. Piece of legislation. And the answer is you're not likely to get that, but you might get there by saying, can we save some lives right now? And is that a victory?
Yeah, it truly is. And it eliminates a lot of abortions. So as it stands these days, Lars, young women are calling a day or two after they've had intimate relations, trying to get an abortion. They don't even know if they're pregnant yet. They won't even show on a pregnancy stick yet. And so that 6-week ban is cutting out a lot of abortions that otherwise would happen. So, you know, we're for life any way we can get it, and praying for big moves like Dobbs and this whole abortion pill ban that's hung up in the courts could be a real next.
Well, and the fact that the government itself ignored a lot of the health side effects, I mean, really serious health side effects of mifepristone, and just said, let's just go ahead and approve it. And we'll approve it at 10 weeks. Then we'll approve it at 7 weeks. Then the Biden administration would like to approve it without even having the young lady see a doctor, which means she doesn't know how long she's been pregnant. You know, and you talked about the 1 or 2 days after. I'm talking about the young lady who may be 12 weeks in and say, I'd like to use mifepristone. Yeah. But if she actually talked to a doctor, he'd say, you can't use it at this point. But Biden wants to be, you know, basically self-diagnosis, self-application of pharmaceuticals, and who cares what happens to the woman or to the baby. And that's pretty serious. That's Dan Steiner from the group called Preborn. Glad to get your calls at 866. Thanks, Dan. It's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You can vote in our Twitter poll. You'll find the brand new question every day at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. You can also check out our Instagram feed and on Facebook and on just about every other social media known to man. Glad to have you with me. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Who are the...
Simply by listening, you're proving how smart you really are. Lars thanks you.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. A lot of people speculating about why Barack Obama made a stealthy visit out to the Nike World Campus yesterday. Flew in on a private jet, apparently, to Hillsborough Airport, motorcaded to Nike, was there for a few hours, and then left around 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon. A lot of speculation. Nobody knows exactly why he was there, although one person suggested that maybe Nike is coming out with a new show, a shoe called the Obummer, and that perhaps that's the reason that Barack Obama was there, to have pictures taken with his new name brand shoe. In any case, welcome back to the program and the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to have you with me. This segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Our Twitter poll today, and I gave you the details of this earlier. The Biden administration tried to launch what we called a Ministry of Truth. That is a government agency that would decide to shut down any information that the Joe Biden administration disagreed with. That quickly got trashed and shot down, and it should have been. Now, I would ask you this. Benton County, Oregon, last week voted unanimously. Its county commissioners did. They voted to have a new policy that says that you will cut off reporters and cut off all access those reporters have to information out of the county if they report stories in a way that the county disagrees with. So should Northwest governments cut off reporters they decide are offering up fake news? I would vote no on that. You can vote any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday, I ask you this, because the governor of Oregon, Tina Kotek, has agreed to divert some of the state police who are supposed to serve the entire state. And Ted Wheeler, she's going to divert them to Portland. And Ted Wheeler, feckless Ted, the mayor of Portland, had said that he voted to defund his own police bureau. And then when violent crime became stratospheric and businesses and residents began fleeing from the city, Ted Wheeler said, well, we need the state police to come in and do the policing that we voted to get rid of. So I ask you the question this way. Should a city that defunded its own police and voted to legalize hard drugs, which they did, get extra help with drug enforcement from the state police? My answer was no. 89% of you joined me in that. But a rather surprising 11% of you said, yes, they should get extra help to replace the police that the city itself decided to defund. On that note, I want to welcome to the program Ian Trottier. Ian, welcome to the program. You've got a big event coming up. Would you mind telling my audience about it?
Lars, Conspiracy Thursday, Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I like that a lot. Maybe they'll call that shoe the Just Do It Michael. Baker City is having...
Oh, no. That is too good. That is too good.
Baker City has put together an astronomical event for the state of Oregon. Going to be a dinner on Friday night, starting at doors opening at 5 p.m. and then 9 a.m. on Saturday at the Rodeo Fairgrounds. This is probably the most epic event for conservatives in that area in 40 years. So the guest list is extensive. There are 30 people taking the stage from 9 a.m. up until 6:30 p.m. This event is rocking and rolling, Lars, and I appreciate your time.
Would you mind mentioning a couple of the headliners that are going to be there for tomorrow and for for tomorrow and Saturday?
I'll tell you what. We got Billy Bush that's going to be coming in via Zoom. He's going to be talking about buying back the Bud Light brand, making it American again. We've got Dr. Brian Artis bringing in the things that he's been doing in regards to medical freedom. We've got Brooks Agnew, 7 times best-selling author. On Amazon, the list is just incredibly extensive, Lars.
Can people just show up on Friday night and buy tickets?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. They can just show up to the door. They can buy tickets. They can go online right now to Baker County, Oregon GOP, and they can pre-order their tickets. Or, of course, they can show up right to the door and they can order tickets. Right now, we've got 9 platforms that are going to be live streaming the event. Citizen Media News is going to live stream it. And the Jim Price Show, or 2 of them, that will be live streaming. And that includes Northwest Liberty News out of Montana with Jim White.
Well, I got to tell you something. Baker City is a great town, and I wish you well with a great event. It sounds like it's going to get a lot of patriots and a lot of people who don't feel very terribly represented, or they do feel terribly represented by the people down in Salem. Ian, thank you very much. That's Ian Trottier, the Take Back Oregon Freedom Rally in Baker City, Oregon, happening tomorrow and on Saturday. Let me jump to a call. Let me grab this one first of all. Let's go to Michael. Who's calling in? We've never had a call from Newfoundland, but Michael, welcome to the program. What do you have to say?
Oh, he told you where I was. I was going to have you try and guess, Lars, with some clues. I'm in St. John's, the oldest city in North America, founded around 1500, and there's this huge St. John the Baptist Catholic Basilica I got to visit while I'm here. And
you got to get to it quick, though. We're going to hit the break.
All right, all right. Well, it's just Traveling Mike. I called you from the Alamo, from Saratoga, but you ran out of time. So I'm just spending some money. Canada's a wonderful place, wonderful people. I'd give them 5 stars.
I thought he was going to talk about Trump and the Democrats and a good conspiracy theory, and he ran himself out of daylight. Sorry about that, Michael. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Trump is the man who can save the Western world, and probably the human beings as well.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
Almost lost my wife, my 67 Corvette, and my cat.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. And a lot of people are asking, why did the Republicans even have that debate on Wednesday night? And my answer to that would be, I think there was a purpose to having it. And should Donald Trump have been there? My answer is no. And he was not there. I saw no point to him being there. And apparently it only gave Chris Christie, a failed former governor of New Jersey, and failed presidential candidate a number of times, the opportunity to attack Trump and tell a joke that didn't exactly go over very well. It wasn't a bad joke. It was just kind of a lame way to deliver it. But that's Christie. My theory on Christie for Conspiracy Theory Thursday is that Christie is looking for a book deal, and he's looking for maybe a gig on CNN, and so he's trying to prove his bona fides by attacking Trump and saying a bunch of things that a Republican would never say. But that's Chris Christie. Doug Burgum, I thought, is one of the smartest guys on the stage, and so is Vivek Ramaswamy. And I think neither one has a snowball's chance of being the nominee of the Republican Party. That's going to go to Donald Trump at this point, and not just because I support him. So I thought we'd talk about that with my friend Ari Hoffman. He's host of the Ari Hoffman Show in Seattle on one of our affiliate stations, KVI. Ari, welcome back. You haven't been here in a while.
Always a pleasure, buddy. Thanks for having me.
So tell me this. Do you think there was a point to putting 7 candidates on the stage last night when everybody in America has seen the polls and Donald Trump has a 40 percentage point plus lead on everybody that's running behind him?
Yeah, like every network, every so often, you need something to get a boost in the ratings, you know, something you can trumpet and say, hey, we got this coming up. But aside from that, no, there wasn't really a point. It was fascinating to watch all these candidates backtrack from their positions the way they presented themselves in the last debate. In the last debate, they came out guns blazing at who they were. And obviously, they were listening to focus groups in the meantime, like Vivek, don't be so aggressive, tone it back a little bit. Nikki Haley, be more aggressive. You know, what's his face? Ron DeSantis, we need you to be more smiling the whole time. It was obvious they were all listening to focus groups. It was pre-practiced, pre-focus grouped. It was all garbage, pre-scripted nonsense. And I got to say, I turned it off halfway through because I was tired of them all interrupting each other. It just looked like a mess. And that came off with a whole bunch of schoolboys arguing and Nikki Haley sounding like mom trying to keep them all in line.
And the moderators as well, including the Hispanic moderator who was... I don't know what was going on with her questions, but some of the questions just seemed completely out to lunch to me. But you know, of course, we've got to make sure that we get the diversity choice up on stage as well. I did hear a couple of ideas that I kind of liked, and I wanted to test them on you, because one of the things I thought had a value, and that is when you have other candidates running in any race, no matter what kind of candidate it's, you know, governor, mayor, senator, whatever, when other candidates bring up other ideas, it kind of forces their opponent to have to react to them. And I'd love to see, you know, Joe Biden comment on, well, the fact that Putin is bad doesn't mean that Ukraine is good. And then Vivek Ramaswamy pointing out, here's a country that's banned opposition political parties, something you'd ordinarily find in places like China or Cuba. And then you had him say, I think that Ramaswamy said that transgender is a mental disorder, which I happen to agree with. And he also said he would favor ending birthright citizenship for the children born here of illegal aliens. All of those ideas, I think, are great ideas.
I think they're great ideas. I think he got some constitutional problems with the last one. But here's something I'm actually going to disagree with you on. I think with regards to the moderator, something I've been advocating for a long time. Look, anytime you come out one of these presidential debates where it's the Republican against the Democrat, everybody always argues over how the moderator was biased in one direction or the other, even though they claim they're supposed to be down the middle of the road. I actually think you should have a Lars Larson on one side, a Rachel Maddow on the other side, both moderating the debate, because that would be fun to watch. You'd get the real questions this way as opposed to the garbage questions. So for me to be saying that about the national debates where you have the two parties, it'd be a little hypocritical of me to go after Fox News. I think the problem is here you're talking to the GOP faithful, and I think there were some bad faith arguments that came from the Univision moderator. I think there were some that were just not based in reality. However, those did give the opportunity for Ron DeSantis actually to shine. The problem was by then, I wasn't watching anymore.
No, and DeSantis, I mean, he's had this inexorable fall from the low 30% range in the polls to where he's in the high teens or low teens. He's at 14 or thereabouts. And I know that the polls are not perfect, but they kind of tell you where things are going. If somebody starts in the 30% range as a candidate and falls to less than half of that, that's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, but here's something else. Take me for a minute. Here's another place where you and I disagree, and it's a rare thing, but it happens sometimes. So I love former President Trump. I think he did an amazing job. I'm concerned about what happens when he runs for election again, and I know we had that Washington Post poll came out, and that's good news for Republicans, but I'm still concerned going into a general election because there were plenty of polls in 2022 that said we were going to win, in 2020 that said we were going to win. Let's remember the polls also said John Kerry was going to beat George Bush and Hillary Clinton was going to beat Donald Trump. So we know how accurate those polls are. But for me, watching Ron DeSantis, being a Ron DeSantis supporter, I'm losing my energy for it because right now it just seems like Trump is far and away winning. And I wonder how many other DeSantis supporters are just going, is there any hope? Do we have to wait for the next time around? And this campaign, the Vivek Ramaswamy campaign, is doing what DeSantis campaign should have done. The Nikki Haley campaign is doing what the DeSantis campaign should have done. He's pretty much been stuck at the same place since he announced. And there doesn't seem to be any fire there. And it's disappointing to people like me who are diehard supporters.
See, and I'm not. I'm not a supporter. I'm curious, though. Why do you think that the Constitution doesn't already say somebody born to an illegal alien is not an American citizen? Because the 14th Amendment seems really clear to me.
I think I agree with you. It seems very clear to me also. The nine people sitting up on that bench, we know that six of them hopefully view things the way we do, but we've been fooled before. I'm just curious what their reading of it is going to be. That's what I'm worried about going down. I think that the constitutional law is actually on Vivek's side and the side of that idea. I think if you read this thing correctly, you're going to see that they never intended for this mess to be happening the way it's happening with these chains of migration happening. That was not something they ever thought of. Also, something that's been going on is the left keeps talking about Ellis Island. Let me give you some stats on Ellis Island. In all the years Ellis Island was open, you had 20 million people coming through. And doing the math on that, that's about 200,000 a year. We have over 200,000 a month coming through right now. And also, the other myth about Ellis Island, people didn't just get on a boat and come here. They had to have their ducks in a row before they got on that boat. They had to have a place to stay. They had to have a job lined up. Yeah, there were some years of corruption, but you still had to have your paperwork and other stuff in order. It was all done legally. They're also forgetting the fact that people got turned back all the time for disease and other problems. If you go visit Ellis Island, there's tons of barracks and holding areas where they were holding people so they could get over the diseases they had or until they could send them back.
And some of them were sent back with tuberculosis, and now tuberculosis is back too. That's Ari Hoffman, my fellow talk show host from our affiliate in Seattle, KVI. Back in a moment, we'll get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439
5277. Just think of him as your concealed carry. This is the Lars Larson Show.
My Democrat colleagues say none of this is relevant because Joe Biden wasn't vice president while his family did these shady deals. Turns out that's complete and total bullshit. It's a lie. Hunter Biden referred to access to his father as the keys to his family's only asset. Those words are going to come back and haunt Hunter Biden and his family forever.
That is Member of Congress Nancy Mace talking today, because they began the hearings for the impeachment of Joe Biden. And believe me, this stuff is getting worse and worse for Joe Biden, which means better and better for America. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your calls. And I'll start getting calls here in just a moment. But I want to share a couple of other things with you as well about the impeachment hearings. These are going to go on for a while. I hope not too long, because I think the case is going to be pretty easily made. The evidence that came out of the House Oversight Committee before this impeachment hearing today, and this is the part. Remember, that was about Ukraine, and we now find out why Donald Trump, President Trump, was on the phone to Ukraine saying, would you please look into the corruption in your country that involves certain people from America? And the Democrats immediately said, you see, he's attacking Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. The memo outlines the primary evidence gathered to date, which directly implicates President Biden in direct bribery schemes with foreign nationals, while his son, Hunter, sold political influence for tens of millions of dollars. And here's the number that ought to stick in your mind. The Biden family and their close associates, according to the House investigators who've been putting together a package to lay out the case for impeachment, accrued more than $24 million from foreign sources between 2014 and 2019. And as Hunter Biden himself described it in that soundbite I just played from Nancy Mace, Joe Biden is the keys to the Biden kingdom. That's what's going on here. Hunter Biden sold his father's influence. The Biden crime family benefited. It's about as simple as that. Now, let's get to your calls. Let's go first to Zach. Hey, Zach, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
I know it's a little bit past time, but I was going to try and touch on some stuff that was said about 45 minutes ago.
About the debate, the GOP debate, and about Vivek Ramaswamy pointing out that Ukraine is a country that's actually banned political opposition?
Yes. So as we all know, they're an ex-Soviet state, and all of the parties I know of that are banned are either affiliated with the FSB or different Russian interference campaigns, because they still want to control Ukraine as best of their ability as a ex-Soviet satellite state. And the Ukrainians don't want that Russian influence because they
suffered what many Ukrainians don't. Now, be careful, though, Zach. Some Ukrainians identify with Russia. Some Ukrainians don't. That's fair to say, correct?
Yes.
So if you have you seem to be going down. You're going down a dangerous path. Are there some people in America who identify with Donald Trump, identify with Make America Great, identify with a lot of ideas that the left says are completely bankrupt and shouldn't even be heard? Is that same thing true in our country?
Yes, but the difference is we are within a country. This isn't a outside country trying to influence us.
Oh, hold on a second. Who do you think has been funding a lot of America's environmental movement and the effort to try to ban oil and natural gas in America? It is China. And we know that for a fact, that China has been funding groups in America to say, you Americans should stop using all the oil and natural gas that you have. And why might China do that? Because China, if they can get us to stop using all the generous resources that God has blessed this country with, oil, natural gas, coal, and everything else, you know who we have to buy energy from? We have to buy it from China in the form of solar panels, in the form of wind turbines, and in the form of electric car batteries and other electric batteries that are used. So China's got an economic dog in the fight. Convince the Americans to stop using their own energy. They will have to buy from us. And that's why China is funding environmental groups and political movements within our country. Now, they do it through enough cutouts that they can get away with it. But should any country be banning any political movement?
I'm just saying that this is why they're doing it. I'm not saying
no, hold on. You're but you're justifying something that is so anti
Russians. And yes,
no, here's the point, though, Zach. You're justifying something that is so anti-democratic. If you have a country that says, we don't like those opposition groups, shut them down. And the country says, okay, we'll shut them down. That's Cuba. That's China. That's North, well, North Korea has no opposition movements that I know of, and they never will, because the opposition movements end up dead. But if you're justifying the idea that the folks who are in power right now can shut down any opposition political groups, is that an idea that any American should identify with?
That's not the point. If I could finish my point, I'm trying to make is that Ukraine remaining independent from Russia is extremely important to our interests, as they are the largest country in Europe. They have the fifth largest, or they're the fifth largest producer.
I know all the reasons. I know all the reasons it benefits us. But if you're a Ukrainian, how do you feel? How should you feel about it? And how should Americans look at it when you say, oh, we don't have any political opposition in our country, we just shut it down? Because believe me, Zach, we're seeing that same kind of thing in America right now. We see the Biden administration saying, let's control social media.
Yes,
let's throttle anything that's conservative. Don't let those ideas out. It's just done on a massive scale in America. And you're saying it's okay for the government, for the people in charge to say, if we have opposition in the country that disagrees with us, we should shut them down.
It's not about disagreeing. It's about the fact that it's literal Russian influence.
And there are a bunch of people in
Ukraine.
You agreed at the beginning, Zach. You agreed at the beginning of this that there are, Zach. You agreed at the beginning of this, did you not? That there are people in Ukraine who identify with Russia, who say we believe that
that
we're
minority versus minority.
Oh, so in other words, you should take any minority party and deny them any voice at all. Just shut the opposition groups down. That's okay with you?
But when
you sound like you belong in an autocracy.
They're foreign activists. They're foreign agents.
And I just pointed out,
it's okay for Biden to accept the bribes he accepted from China. And that
no, I'm not saying it's okay, but that is where he's getting personal monies to the Biden family in exchange for selling out Americans. What you're saying is, if there's an opposition political group in a country and the current government says, we don't like that opposition, no current government likes an opposition group. You can believe me that Joe Biden does not like the Make America Great Again group. He
disparages any group.
Well, no, he does. He loves the Democrats. He loves the unions.
Whoa,
he loves anybody who puts the Bidens in charge. But literally, Zach, you're defending the idea of people in a government in a country simply saying, if we disagree with you, you will no longer have an opposition movement. You're not allowed to have it because you identify with the wrong people. And believe me, the Biden regime is doing the same thing with those of us who consider ourselves MAGA. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's saying the things you wish you could say. More with Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and your emails. But first, I want to talk to Judge Phil Ginn, who is president of the Southern Evangelical Seminary, about what happened in last night's GOP debate and about the fact that apparently to Chris Christie, it wasn't fair that Donald Trump, the lead candidate at 57% to win the Republican nomination for president of the United States, wasn't on the stage. Chris Christie and a couple of others were very unhappy about that. I say tough luck. If you were the 57% candidate, you probably wouldn't show up either. Judge Ginn, welcome back to the program.
Well, Lars, it's always good to be with you, my friend.
What'd you make? Well, thank you for that. But what'd you make of last night's debate at the Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California? It's a beautiful place, by the way.
It is an absolutely gorgeous place, and that was the best thing about the debate. You know, I didn't think they could outdo the first debate, but I believe they accomplished that. They outdid the first debate by it being such a great debacle. It reminded me, down south, we used to have Wide World of Wrestling, and we would have chain matches where we would throw everybody in at the same time, and whoever survived was the winner. And that's about what this was last night. Really, honestly, there are no winners or losers. They're only survivors of that sort of thing.
It is sad because, I heard some good ideas out of some of the candidates. And I was at an event that we had where we had a bunch of people watch the debate, average folks, and not to poll them or anything like that, but just so they could. And then we had a Q&A. And I said, I think there's a value to showcasing the rather broad and long bench that the Republicans have. Because over on the Democrat side, they've got Joe. They've got cackling Kamala. They've got maybe Gavin Newsom hiding off stage, waiting to jump on stage should Joe exit and Kamala become the president. And the Democrats don't want her either. And who else have they got? Their bench is empty, which kind of suggests a lack of people in the Democrat Party with leadership potential.
The one they're most afraid of is Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
I'll bet they are, because he could end up as the nominee. And you're right. And he's got some interesting characteristics. There are things I agree with him on, and there are things I absolutely am dead set against that he believes in, but he's an interesting candidate all the same.
Well, I think what they're afraid of with him is that he'll go rogue and go third party. And if he does that, then Biden's, or whoever is the nominee for the Democratic Party, is probably toast if he does that.
You know, isn't it interesting if we ended up doing a Ross Perot, and God bless Ross Perot, I actually like the guy a lot, but Ross Perot gave us...
Like Ross.
No, I mean, the guy will spend money to send a team in to rescue his people in Iran. I mean, this is the kind of guy that, and I loved his charts, and I loved the giant sucking sound and all the rest of that, but and I never got the chance to interview him. We'd asked a few times, but the fact is that, you know, he gave us Bill Clinton. You know, I mean, Herbert Walker Bush was not the best, but he gave us Bill Clinton, and we got Clinton for 8 years.
That's true. Very true. So, you know, who knows? Maybe we can pay them back this time. I agree with you about at least seeing some good ideas and showcasing the folks, but when they get into this quibbling back and forth, I raised four daughters, and it seemed like I was sitting at the dinner table listening to them last night, going with how my daughters used to go back and forth as to whose fault something was in the process. So, Nikki Haley, I noticed where the New York Times said she won, but why in the world pick a fight with Tim Scott? What's the point of it? And the same thing for Tim. Why pick a fight with Nikki? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, especially a fight about draperies. Wasn't that what it was at the end of the day?
that was something about draperies in some place that had to do when she was with the United Nations.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to hit somebody on taxes, but go ahead.
The one thing you can say about DeSantis is that he at least had a firm enough presence that nobody could talk over him.
Yeah. Well, and I kind of felt sorry for the moderators in some ways. I mean, I usually don't, but you know, they had to figure out how do we call on seven people during these various segments in some way. So they called on Tim Scott three times, and then they ignored him for a half an hour. And even he started to object, "Hey, I'm over here. You know, do you remember I'm here?" Right. But that's what you get with a seven person debate.
It's just, by its very nature, it's almost an impossible thing to make work. And ultimately, I don't know that the value of it can outweigh the problems that are created by it. As I said, the best thing these guys and the one gal can do is to survive this and go on to the next debate. But unless something happens drastically, it's just a futile attempt anyway. You're right. There's no need for Mr. Trump to come. It doesn't make sense for him to come. If I were him, I wouldn't come. Why subject yourself to that sort of dog and pony show when you don't have to.
No, it's interesting, too, to see Pence. I used to be kind of a Pence guy. I've long since shed myself of any allegiance to Mike Pence. I think he did some things that were really wrong as vice president in serving Donald Trump. The most important, of course, was throwing General Flynn under the bus without bothering to ask about the evidence. And I'm going to keep reminding people of that, because if he'd said to the FBI, so what are the lies he's supposed to have told you that makes him a criminal? The FBI would have been forced to say, well, we have a transcript of his conversation. He didn't make any offers to the Russians and he didn't lie to us. And that would have changed a bunch of things that happened during the Trump administration that all seemed to go south. Not all, but a lot of them went south after General Flynn's departure. But the Democrats had to get rid of him because Flynn knew where the bodies were buried. Where do you think it goes from here, and who stays in and who gets out?
Well, I think a lot of them can survive. Governor Burgum may not be able to survive. Chris Christie is going to have some life. He'll probably make it through one or two primaries. DeSantis will be there. I'm interested to see what the pickup will be from Nikki Haley. I agree with you. There's a lot of things I like about Mike Pence. There were the thing that you mentioned with General Flynn is certainly a negative in his part, but he's got too narrow a place, and bless his heart, he's like myself sometimes. He's not very charismatic.
No, he's not.
In his delivery. Ramaswamy is probably the opposite. I don't guess describe him the way that I do, but he's like all of the little trinkets and things that stores put at the as you go out past the cash register and their impulse buys, and you think, oh, I need that, and then immediately when you get to the car, you say, why in the world did I buy that? I don't think he'll be there for the long haul. Ultimately, I think you probably are going to see. Surviving the longest will probably be DeSantis and Haley. That's what I think, that the two that I think will survive the longest. And of course, all of that will play out. Is the question would be whether Mr. Trump could be wounded bad enough to by what's occurring with him or some new attempt. I don't think they're through chasing him by any means. Who knows? He might be wounded bad enough to be taken out of the fight.
He could be. But it seems, though, every time the Democrats launch another attack on Donald Trump, it gets stronger. That's Judge Phil Ginn, president of the Southern Evangelical Seminary. I'll be back. I'll get to a bunch of your phone calls in the next segment. You got the Lawrence Larson Show.
Informed and always guessing what he'll say next. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I love it when we get callers who just want to talk my producer's ear off and say, Lars is using inaccurate numbers about the border. No, we're not. We use numbers that come from Customs and Border Protection. They estimate, they know the number of people they've encountered at the border, which as of last month of August, was 280,000 people in a single month. In fact, there were days in August where more than 10,000 crossed in a single day, according to Customs and Border Protection. When somebody said, well, that's the wrong number, I said, okay, give me your source on the number. My source is the Border Patrol. So that's how we set that straight. Our Twitter poll today has to do with a story that I detailed earlier in the show today, and that is Benton County, Oregon. Its county commission voted for an official policy that says if the county decides that a given reporter, TV, radio, newspaper, online, whatever it is offering up information they disagree with, which is the job of reporters, to give information not just from one source but multiple sources, should Northwest governments cut off reporters that they have decided, as a government they have decided, are offering up what they define as fake news? My answer to that is no. Benton County's commissioners voted for it unanimously. We invited their county commissioners to come on the program and explain why they're trying to punish reporters for telling any story that the county fathers and mothers disagree with, and they declined. Their official spokesman, who gets paid to be the spokesman for the county, he declined as well. So should governments cut off reporters that they deem are offering fake news? My answer to that is no. Today's Twitter poll can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. To your calls now at 866-HEY-LARS. Let me start with a conspiracy theory, and that's Stan in Jefferson. Stan, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Well, let me just read a few things here. This is from the January
if it's short.
Incident. Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick died of natural causes after riot, medical examiner says.
Yes,
first
he did.
Of all, they were saying that the rioters killed him. But yep. Then they go on in this story. This is a couple years old from NBC News. There's an autopsy revealed that Sicknick, who died hours after the Capitol riot, suffered two strokes at the base of the brainstem caused by a blood clot.
Yep.
My question is, being a first responder, did he have the vaccine?
I don't think so, and it's not likely. And can I tell you why it's not likely?
Sure.
Because the vaccine first became available, the jab, as I call it, because I don't consider it a vaccine. It doesn't work. It doesn't prevent COVID. It doesn't keep you from transmitting COVID. I've gone through this a number of times, but it's not a good vaccine. It doesn't work very well, and it wears off very quickly. It first became available, the first doses actually were available on the 14th of December of 2020. And then it became more generally available starting into by the day Joe Biden took office, January 2021, they had 13 million Americans had received it. The rest had not. I've never taken it. I've chosen not to. But it's very unlikely that he had had the jab, to answer your question. But it is what you've brought up is so important, because Joe Biden himself has lied and said that Brian Sicknick died because of the riot. The medical examiner of Washington, D.C. decided otherwise. And you know, Stan, how would you describe the government of Washington, D.C.? Liberal or conservative?
Liberal.
Very, very liberal. And so even if you thought there's a political motive in there somewhere, the medical examiner said this guy died of natural causes. He went to work on January 6th. He went to the riot. He did his duty. He went back to the station house. He said he was fine. He went home. He died the next day of a stroke, which does happen to people. And the medical examiner said it was natural causes. And the medical examiner said it didn't appear to have any connection to the activities of January the 6th. And yet Joe Biden and his friends will keep telling that lie over and over again. Let's go to Jacob. Hey, Jacob, welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. So my conspiracy has developed from listening to your show. I remember in the beginning of the pandemic that you were endorsing the COVID injections, and you're also endorsing the
No, I was
home.
Not. No, I never did.
Okay.
Your memory is false.
Endorse staying at home, because I remember you saying you were in your basement and you weren't wanting to leave.
I don't have a basement. I think you were listening to somebody else. I don't have a basement. I wasn't staying in my basement. I say if people are sick, if you're sick, you should stay at home. Sure, I said that, but I'd say that about the flu. I'd also say it about chicken pox or measles or anything else. Is it not sensible to say if you're sick, stay home?
No, that's sensible.
Okay, I never did endorse the jab and never did take it. So I don't know why you'd say that.
Okay, I thought you did. So my conspiracy was that now you're too scared on radio to admit, like the majority of reviewers, I feel, think that the COVID-19 injection campaign was mostly fraudulent and possibly nefarious. My conspiracy is you're too scared to say that on air.
No, I'm not scared to say anything on air that I believe. And do I think it was fraudulent? I've said this, Jacob, you know, I couldn't go back and find all the hundreds of times that I've said the jab does not stop you from getting it. And we've run the Joe Biden soundbite, the crazy one where he says, if you take the vaccine, you can't catch COVID, which is a lie. He said, if you take the vaccine, you won't go to the hospital, which is not true. If you take the vaccine, you can't die from COVID, also not true. And I've said it over and over. I think you were listening to somebody else's show, but I appreciate the call. The Lars